on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us this morning. Before we begin, first let me thank everybody who has become a member or renewed their membership in our Winter Pledge Drive. We really appreciate your vote of confidence in our work and your generosity. Today on the program, we continue our series of conversations with people who you'll find on the very crowded ballot for mayor of Baltimore. There will be 13 Democratic candidates on the April 26th ballot. 5 candidates will appear on the Republican ballot. 3 Green Party candidates, 1 Libertarian, 2 Independents, and 5 candidates who are not affiliated with any party will also be on the general election ballot in November. For those of you keeping score, that's 29 people aspiring to succeed Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake next year. We're spending every Wednesday here on Maryland Morning speaking with candidates for mayor and some of the other offices that are up for grabs next month. Today, my guest is the organizer, activist, and educator, DeRay McKesson. He's a Democrat. He's 30 years old. He lives in Roland Park. This is his first campaign for public office. He came to national attention as an activist in Ferguson, Missouri, following the death of Michael Brown at the hands of Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson. He was in Baltimore following the death of Freddie Gray while in custody of Baltimore police, and he has been a fixture in the national media talking about many of the issues that have been raised by the Black Lives Matter movement and others. He's a planner and founder of Campaign Zero, which offers policy solutions to police violence. Before he became a full-time activist, he was a Teach for America teacher in New York. He has also worked as an administrator in the Baltimore City Public Schools and in Minneapolis. Mr. McKesson, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
It's good to be here.
So folks saw that you registered, you know, literally with minutes left on the deadline. And it appeared to them, without knowing you or knowing anything about it, that this was some sort of last-minute, fluky kind of deal. And people immediately suspected that this was sort of something of a stunt that was part of a larger strategy to do something else. But you really want to be the mayor of Baltimore, don't you?
Correct. Yeah. You know, I made the decision when it was the right time to make the decision for me. I spoke to many people here in the city about it and wanted to make sure it was as thoughtful as possible. And I made the decision at the right time for me. I think that, you know, this is a city of promise and possibility, and we have an opportunity to usher in a new era of transparency and promise here in the city. I think about this election as the choice between politics as usual or the politics of change. And I think this is the time.
So what can you do as the mayor that you can't do now? I mean, as an activist, as an organizer, as a protester, it's all about disruption. Does government need disruption? Does the city government need disruption? Is that the main thing you would bring?
Yeah, so there's so many similarities, but some key differences. When we think about some similarities, it's this notion of telling the truth in public. So much of what we've done in the past 18 months, so much of what I've done in my career is tell the truth in public. And the truth is that 344 murders means that there's a crisis. A school system that isn't meeting the needs of kids is a crisis. And we, in so many ways, have reached a point where we need to choose a new path and new leadership. And that commitment to telling the truth in public remains the same in public office. We found that so many people who've taken the traditional route to political office have gotten to office and they've made decisions that either serve themselves or don't serve the people that they're supposed to represent. So this is a real opportunity. When I think about some of the similarities, it is about sort of pushing systems to be the best that they can be for people and like pushing for real change that will change people's lives today, tomorrow, and the day after. There's a way that we did that in protest, and there's a way that you do that from the inside. You need people to be in all of those spaces. I'm trying to be thoughtful about where I think I can make the most impact. When I think about my hometown, the place I grew up, the place I love, the place I live, I think we have a real opportunity to do that here.
You have this national platform. You were working in Minneapolis in the public schools there in an administrative position. You decided to go to Ferguson, check out what was going on, find out for yourself. You started tweeting. You became this, you know, sensation, literally. I mean, people just started really paying attention to what you had to say and to your observations. With that national platform, why would you concentrate just on Baltimore? I mean, how does that help you advance, you know, whatever larger goals you might have in your life?
Yeah, you know, so born and raised here in Baltimore, I taught sixth grade math in East New York, Brooklyn. I worked at the Harlem Children's Zone, then came back here, opened up an after-school center on the west side of Baltimore, and then trained teachers and worked in the school system. So much of this work has always been about the concrete things that we can do to make people's lives better immediately, right, today and tomorrow, which is why the platform is about crime and safety and education, but it's also about public health and arts and culture and the environment. So when I think about running for mayor, it is about being in a position to actually make the concrete changes. So much of what we've done is push and say what needs to happen. And now we have the opportunity in this role to put in place and to usher in a new phase in the city that we know we deserve. I grew up here. I think about the 90s was a time here where we tried every program that could possibly happen in urban America, and we didn't see the outcomes change. And that is because there hasn't been a focus on scale. Like, how do we make sure that we actually address the problem at scale? 70,000 people with substance abuse issues is a problem of scale. 40% illiterate adults is a scale issue. And we also haven't developed a strategy. So we think about all the incredible people doing work around young people 0 to 3, right? Like newborns, around home visits, or pre-K, age 4 or 5. So much incredible work, no strategy. We think about literacy, incredible work happening in the city, no strategy. And what I'm offering is a plan that I think is aggressively innovative, that'll address these issues across a host of areas that focus on strategy and scale.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning, DeRay McKesson. He's one of the Democratic candidates for the office of mayor in the city of Baltimore. I have spoken, you're now the 7th mayoral candidate on the Democratic side with whom I've spoken on the air, and I've spoken with several others in interviews that we're posting on our website. I can say that your proposals with your platform are more complete, are longer, are more detailed than any of the other candidates, and I think a lot of folks have applauded you for that. I wonder, are these approaches that are specific to Baltimore? I mean, you reference in this platform a number of different cities that are trying this, that, or the other thing. Do you think that Baltimore has specific problems, problems that are unique to Baltimore that one wouldn't find in some of the other cities that you referred to, San Francisco, Philadelphia, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that what's unique about Baltimore is that many of the problems that we see across the country manifested here. We think about the history of hypersegregation in the city. There's a unique history here that we've seen replicated around redlining in cities across the country. So we have been dealing with so many of these issues for such a long time. You think about drug addiction, that it has been a problem here in ways that it has not been problems other places. One of the reasons that I try to be thoughtful about referencing where things have worked before in the platform is for two reasons. One is to help people understand that this stuff is possible. That when they think about things like a match savings account, it seems like a pie in the sky idea to people when we think about closing the wealth gap. But it is actually happening. When you think about ending cash bail, people say, like, I can't imagine a system without cash bail. And then you say D.C. did it 2 decades ago, and they're like, okay. So helping people understand that we can do this work, that we don't need to reinvent the wheel in some places, that we can learn from best practices and think about how to apply them to context here that will change people's lives. But this is very much a Baltimore plan. It was so much input from Baltimore people, business owners, citizens, policy experts, and obviously informed by my experience in many places and my perspective that's been informed by my work for my life.
I moderated a mayoral debate that you were part of last week at the National Federation for the Blind. There have been 23 of these forums or something like that, 25.
It's a lot of them.
Last count, a whole lot of them.
It's like speed dating for voters.
Yeah, it is in a lot of ways, although it's tough to imagine any better way to do it. But you talk in all of these venues about accountability, making the city accountable to the people who live here. What do you mean by that, and how has the city not been accountable heretofore?
Yep. So there are some simple ways. Like, what does it mean that we are in a city where it is not clear how the city council votes? That, like, just from a record-keeping perspective, you don't know, because of the way the records are kept. We can actually work on that. And then some of the more nitty-gritty things about police accountability, we know there are a host of things, like a civilian oversight board. What does it mean that police officers, when they kill people, they don't have to take a drug test? That there are a host of issues there that we need to deal with when we think about the police and accountability. And then so much of it at the mayor's level is about being really transparent about what the goals and outcomes are, and also our progress towards them. And then making sure that the person in the office has integrity and is not making decisions about themselves, but is making decisions about the city overall. And that's the philosophy and approach. When we think about the details, you see that peppered all across the platform with this focus on transparency, making sure that we publish reports regularly, that there's auditing, and that we are open to talk about how the city can grow. That, you know, I'm very clear that this is an imperfect system and that it takes people pushing to push the government to think about how it can be better.
You're one of several outsiders on the Democratic side of the ballot in this race. What's wrong with political experience? What's wrong with folks whose job and career arc has included, you know, legislative and executive positions in government? Is there a particular advantage that you, as a person who's not yet held a position in government, brings to the job?
Yeah, you know, if the establishment is what we choose and if the familiar is who we choose, we know what we're going to get. It's what got us here. And here is a place where we should not be. We should be at a better phase of Baltimore. And we can be there, but we won't be there if we continue to choose the same style of leadership. And I think there's actually consensus around that. When I think about what I bring as someone who is not beholden to establishment politics, it's a breath of fresh air. It's a fresh set of eyes on old issues. And it's an ability to bring people to the table who might not have shared goals, but have shared outcomes. We want to live in a Baltimore that is safe for everybody. We want to live in a Baltimore where people, every student learns in a safe environment every day and experiences rigor in the classroom, in a city where everybody has a job and can support their family. We might not agree always about how to get there, but we do want to live in a Baltimore that looks like that. And I think that a fresh set of eyes in someone who knows how to bring people to the table, which is clear in my experience, and also think about these issues really deeply across a range of topics is important.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask your indulgence to stick around after the news. We'll continue our conversation.
Good stuff.
DeRay McKesson is one of 13 Democrats running in the April 26 primary for mayor of the city of Baltimore. There are 29 candidates overall for that office. We'll have more with DeRay McKesson after a break for the news. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Stick around.
I'm producer Rob Sivak. If you want to join in on the conversation, go to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, and make a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Today, we're continuing our weekly series of conversations with candidates for mayor of the city of Baltimore. This morning, Democratic candidate DeRay McKesson joins me. He was born in West Baltimore. He began his work as an organizer and activist before he went to college. He taught in New York as part of Teach for America, and he's worked in the administrations of the Baltimore and Minneapolis public schools. He is one of the founders of Campaign Zero, and he's been very active in efforts to end police violence across the country. As candidate for mayor, he has presented policy proposals in a wide range of areas that are far and away more detailed than proposals put forward by any of the other candidates. He has not held public office in the past, but he has clearly given some thought as to how he would approach Baltimore's challenges were he to be nominated in the April 26th Democratic primary. So, Mr. McKesson, let's talk a little bit about the role and the capacity that the mayor has and that the city government can have. You mentioned before the break matched savings accounts. These are college savings accounts that would be started for young children when they're born in the city of Baltimore. There are some folks who would say, that's a lovely idea, it's terrific, but is that really a function of city government? Shouldn't that be left to some other entity, perhaps even the state or the federal government? Why is that a city thing that you think we should be doing?
Yep, so I'm reminded that so much of the work that impacts people's daily lives happens at the city level. And you are correct that this is not the city alone, and so much of the work is never the city alone, it is the city leading. So when we think about San Francisco has been a leader in this area and they created this and brought the private money together and the philanthropic partners to make this a reality, if the goal is actually to make sure that kids can afford college, that this is another way to do it when we think about birth cohorts. But it is not the city alone. When we think about the role of the mayor, it is to put forth the vision, to put the right people in the right place, and it's to execute that vision. And that also means to lead, to bring people to the table and say, here's what people in the city deserve, this is what life should be like, and to plan around that.
You have met President Obama. You've met the leading candidates for president. Have you met Governor Larry Hogan? What's your relationship with him? And how would you imagine that relationship would be were you to become the mayor of Baltimore?
I've not yet met Governor Hogan. You know, I have a deep experience working with people who working with people from a range of perspectives. I think that my experience in the last 18 months highlights that. The meetings with Loretta Lynch, Attorney General Lynch, Valerie Jarrett, other senior administration officials and meeting with members of the police unions across the country, or being in spaces with police chiefs and being on panels where we might not agree on tactics or how to get there, but we all want there to be safer communities. And I think I've experienced bringing people to the table and working with people. And I look forward to working with Governor Hogan about how we make this city as strong as it possibly can be.
Can you speculate or point to ways in which your approach to that particular part of the role of being mayor, which is to advocate for the city on the state and the federal level, how that approach would be different from Mayor Rawlings Blake or from any of your current competitors in the race for the nomination?
Yeah, I have so much experience building coalitions across groups of people who might not otherwise come together. I think of that work being what we've done in the past 18 months is use new technologies and innovative approaches to bringing people together to build coalitions. And I will continue that as mayor. And in terms of reaching out to other elected officials, what I've come to realize is people want to be a part of the solution. And what we have to do is help people think about their role a little differently. So I think about the meetings I've had with Van Hollen recently, who's running for Senate, Donna Edwards, and so many other people who want to think about how we do the work around the safety of our communities differently. And I'll continue those meetings and talking to people in addition to people in communities. And, you know, I think about when I go to get lunch, I talk to business owners about like the Baltimore that they want to be in. And that work will continue. I think a rich experience having conversations with people that otherwise might not have happened, partly because of digital spaces, but also because of my commitment to listening.
On 81, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning, DeRay McKesson. He is one of 13 folks running for the Democratic nomination for mayor of Baltimore. You talk a lot about job creation and economic development in your platform. You talk about suggesting targets for hiring residents who are living on public assistance. Employers might tell you that there is a paucity of qualified applicants. How do you, align the need for skill and qualifications with the need for employment in a population that oftentimes doesn't have a lot of employment experience?
Yeah, so business owners are correct. We have to deal with the skill gap. Is what does it mean to be in a city with 40 where there's a 40% adult illiteracy rate? That means that so many adults are going to into careers where there's not a ladder. And if we're going to have a strong economy, we must deal with adult literacy, and we have to do it in new ways. What we know is that people are taking the GED, but they are not passing it, and we need to consider having a degree-granting adult high school that we've seen happen, or diploma-granting adult high school that we've seen work in other places. What we know is that the GED, thousands of people are taking it a year and maybe a few hundred are passing it, that actually is not equipping people with the skills that process is, and we need to think about that differently. So I would agree. You know, I'm also advocating for a $15 minimum wage and when at the state level, and it's important that we think about this in the region or the space within which Baltimore sits. And, you know, I've heard small business owners worry that this might adversely impact their businesses, and what I remind people.
Meaning that if there's a minimum wage that's only in place in Baltimore of $15 an hour.
Or just in general. You know, I'm not advocating for just a Baltimore minimum wage. I'm advocating for the state level. But some people worry about what the increase will do. And what we know to be true is that low wages lead to high turnover in small businesses and low productivity. And people often, quit, or they're not as productive. And higher wages means that people have to get less jobs, and they are actually more productive, and there's less turnover. That this is actually an economic benefit for not only the employee, but also the employer long term.
I've asked, I think, every single one of the other people who's running for mayor, on the Democratic side at least, this particular question. How does the mayor in that job make it possible for more jobs to be created in the city of Baltimore? What's the specific thing that the mayor can do that folks on the city council can't do, or the governor can't do, or private business can't do? What's the thing that the mayor can do to create jobs?
Yep. So think about a few things. Is that remember that the only jobs that the government technically creates are government jobs, right? Either through contracts or through the direct work of the government. The other parts are about either being the city's biggest cheerleader. So being thoughtful about inviting businesses into the city and making space and incentivizing what it means for businesses to come. It is also about the conditions of the of those who are looking for employment. So making sure that people are have the skills and they know where the jobs are, and we can actually do that at the city level, increasing opportunities for job fairs or skill development. And then it's also about making sure that we set up the playing field so that people can open businesses, that it's not a hard process to start a small business, that we know that small businesses contribute a significant amount to the economy here, and making sure the rules are simple for people, and also encouraging businesses to grow within the city and not leave the city as they expand.
Everybody in an election year in particular talks about property taxes and the fact that the property tax rate in Baltimore is so much higher than any place else, more than double every other jurisdiction in the state. In your view, to what degree does the rate of property tax in the city of Baltimore become a barrier for folks starting new businesses or folks choosing to live here or choosing to stay here?
Yep. So I'll say two things. One is that what makes sense fiscally is likely for there to be an annual decrease that is that people can expect. And I think that we cannot commit to that until we do a review of the current city finances to understand better how money is being spent and what the impact financially will be. With that said, I've also heard from so many people that it is not necessarily that the property tax is so high that they are unwilling to pay it, but that the return on the investment is actually so low that people are paying a high property tax and are not benefiting from what they expect when in terms of what it means to live in the city. That it's not as safe as people want it to be, that the schools are not what they want it to be, and the quality of life overall is not what they want it to be. And we can actually fix those things. We can make the schools stronger. We can make communities safer. We can address the quality of life issues so that people feel like there's a return on the investment that they're providing by paying the property tax.
You mentioned the fact that we had 344 homicides last year in the city of Baltimore. That is a crisis. You came to prominence nationally because of your work in the area of police misconduct. You've advocated, among other things, for a complete repeal of the LEOBR, the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. Currently in Annapolis, they're tweaking it. They're fooling with it. They're trying to adjust it. You want the whole thing thrown out. Would you replace it with anything? Is there any role for legislation that protects the rights of officers?
Yeah, so I just met with the FOP recently, and we talked about this, and we disagreed.
Fraternal Order of Police.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So there are two things. One is that there are some parts of the LEOBR that don't make sense. That officers, it is not clear that officers should have 3 or 10 days before they have to make a statement once they're charged with a crime. That defendants, no other defendant gets that right, and it is not clear that they should be held to a different standard. It is based on some questionable science that suggests that people need 2 sleep cycles before they can remember something accurately, and that is not science that's applied to anyone else. The other thing that I'll offer is, like I said to the FOP, that those things should be negotiated at the local level in the contract. So I'm open to these topics coming up again, and they should happen at the local level, because we know that the context of policing changes depending on the city or the county. They should not be state law, which treats every municipality as if it is the same. And we know that policing or safety issues in Baltimore are different than they are in Allegheny County. They're different than they are in PG County and St. Mary's County. And the LEOBOR does not take the contextual realities into account in ways that preserve the life of citizens.
There's a contract coming up, a new police contract coming up in June. What would you add to it or take out of it?
Yeah, so there's so many things. You know, I would end the MOU that says that officers do not have to get drug tested after there's a deadly shooting. That just doesn't make sense. There's also, and Commissioner Davis and I agree on this, there is language in the contract that allows officers to essentially make alternate hearing boards that preclude accountability within the police department, and we need to address that. I would also call for the DOJ to expand its review, this current review, under the consent decree process or the pattern and practice to include internal affairs, to look at police overtime and also include school police. But there are a host of things in the platform that are on the website at deraidformayor.com that I encourage people to look at. We also need to be aggressive when we think about the use of force policy here, that we need to make sure that our use of force policy explicitly talks about the preservation of life, about de-escalation as a core part of it. And there's some other important parts of the use of force policy that need to be enhanced.
The other night at the National Federation for the Blind, I gave you 30 seconds to talk about education. This morning, I'm going to be much more generous. I'm going to give you 45 seconds. That's all we got left. But you called for reconfiguring the role of the city in the running of the public schools. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I think that we need to look at four institutions that City Hall doesn't manage and we'll need to manage them soon. When we think about we don't manage jails, the buses, schools, or the community college, we'll need to think about our relationship with them differently. In the meantime, I'm calling for an adult literacy strategy that currently doesn't exist. When we think about pre-K, we have to close the gap. There are about 500, 600 kids who are eligible for pre-K who are currently not getting services, and there's about 25% chronic absenteeism among pre-K students. We have to address those issues, and then think about how we can provide wraparound services to teachers so that teachers have the supports and teachers in classrooms have the supports they need to be successful, whether that's robust after school, whether that's resources in classrooms, that we can actually do that at the city level.
All right, we're going to have to call it a day there. DeRay McKesson, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time, and
thank you.
We will see you on the trail. Cool. DeRay McKesson is one of 13 candidates for mayor of Baltimore whose name will appear on the ballot in the April 26th Democratic primary. DeRay McKesson is the seventh Democratic candidate that I've spoken to here on Maryland Morning. I've also spoken with several other candidates in conversations that are posted on our website. You can also find my discussions with Representative Donna Edwards and Representative Chris Van Hollen, who are running for the United States Senate. Come to wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Next week, we'll turn our eye to the election of Baltimore Circuit Court judges. There will be eight names on the ballot, and voters will be asked to pick six. There are plenty of folks who think it's a bad idea for judges to be elected. How are we supposed to know who would make a good judge? Well, we'll talk to a legal scholar about it, as well as two non-incumbent candidates. In coming weeks, we'll also talk about the many Baltimore City Council seats that are being hotly contested, congressional races, and we'll hear more from some of the candidates for mayor. If you are not registered to vote, you have about a month until April 5th to register to be able to participate in this important election. We've got a link on our website with registration information. If you know folks who aren't registered, please come to our website and send them the link. Coming up later in the broadcast, a conversation with one of the Metropolitan Opera's brightest star, Alex Schrader, will be singing this weekend at the Lyric Opera House. He's in the Maryland Morning House this morning. Stay with us. I'm Tom Hall. Now it's time for the environment in focus.